60 years ago tonight, France surrendered to Germany at Compiègne, near Paris. With the fall of France in June 1940, Europe was under fascist control from Gibraltar to Warsaw to Oslo. Commentator Robert Trout reported much of that story to radio listeners, and tonight, 60 years later, he remembers the day Hitler had won his great war.
It began on May 10, 1940.
Angesichts der unmittelbar bevorstehenden feindlichen Kriegsausweitung.
This is the BBC Home Service. Here is a short news bulletin. The German army invaded Holland and Belgium early this morning by land and by landings from parachutes.
For me, the fall of France began in the dead of night. My telephone had become a kind of alarm to history about to be made. The teletypes at CBS sprang to life sometime around 2 a.m., and I was called to the studio. While Europe went to war, most of America slept. Once again, I would see the sun rise over the East River from behind a microphone. The war bulletins were full of the same old names that haunted a generation. Liège, the Somme, the Marne, Verdun. Many young reporters felt the excitement of photos and books of their boyhood come alive. But older men simply gulped in disbelief and terror.
And here in brief is the situation as we prepare to take you overseas. The Germans smashed into France on a 50-mile front, with their main effort directed around Sedan. The latest French communique indicates that this is a tremendous German attack in full force, but says the...
In London, the consequences of May 10th were more political than military. The cautious diplomacy of Neville Chamberlain collapsed in disgrace. For 3 years, he had tried to deal with Hitler as the complex outcome of deeply rooted social and historical conditions. That evening, England turned to a man who would deal with him as a monster.
We seek to beat the life and soul out of Hitler and Hitlerism. That alone, that all the time, that to the end.
Winston Churchill would tell the British that it was their finest hour. It was a great defiant hunk of a phrase, and more prophetic than even he realized. It deeply offends me today when politicians invoke its righteousness to make a foolish vote look like an act of courage.
Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duty, and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
The German plan was as successful as it was simple. Hitler struck in the north, then in the center. 7 days after the attack, the CBS shortwave listening station began picking up German victory announcements.
Das Oberkommando der deutschen Wehrmacht gibt bekannt. Die große Schlacht in Belgisch und Französisch Flandern geht mit der...
On May 25th, the last resistance broke. The Germans chased 350,000 British and French troops to the Channel port of Dunkirk. With nothing to stop them, France was doomed. The most civilized voice coming out of the chaos belonged to my CBS colleague, Eric Severide, who made his last broadcast as the Germans entered the city.
This is Paris at midnight. I don't know how many more radio broadcasts can be made from the Paris studio. If there is an interruption, we will try to continue with facilities installed in other towns further south. People still sat in the cafe terraces tonight, in the darkness. People who sense they are living on borrowed time.
The government fled Paris on the 13th, first to Tours, then Bordeaux. 3 million French fled south with it. Severide followed them. Whenever he went on the air, he was immediately cut through to the full network.
We interrupt the Ankara broadcast to bring you an emergency broadcast from France by our correspondent Eric Severide, who has just been able to establish contact from the new French government radio headquarters somewhere in France.
A night-long trip to this town from Paris is something I feel I can't properly describe in a few seconds' time. You found yourself in the middle of a steadily rolling convoy of ambulances coming back from the front just a few miles to the north. And whenever you stopped and took your motor, you heard the same sound on the path beside the road, the steady stuffing of shoes in the gravel.
as the refugees on foot, the fathers and mothers and children.
This is Columbia, New York, calling Eric Severide in Tours, France. Go ahead, Tours.
The Germans have crossed the Marne at Château-Thierry, where they crossed it in 1918 in the last great drive of the war. The civilians from Paris continue to pour through this region of France.
Paris fell the next day, the 14th. German soldiers entered the city more as tourists than conquerors, carrying cameras and snapping pictures.
Der völlige Zusammenbruch der ganzen französischen Front zwischen dem Ärmelkanal und der Maginot-Linie bei Montmédy.
German radio reported that Hitler paraded into Paris. As France teetered on collapse, America began to sense what was at stake. At CBS, we were on a treadmill of short broadcasts. Severide was in Bordeaux by now, Edwin Hartrich in Berlin. In New York that night, we could scarcely believe that France was finished.
For Europe, for America, and all of you, the consequences of the defeat of the French army will indeed be great, as you all well know. Perhaps there has never been such a great and sudden shift in the balance of world power since the Elizabethan days, when the British defeated the Spanish Armada.
And now to the German capital for the report of Edwin Hartrich. Go ahead, Berlin.
France has capitulated. The Führer is now on his way to a meeting place to decide the terms of the armistice. We learn here tonight that the armistice may be signed at Compiègne. This was a small railroad junction in the forest of Compiègne where Marshal Foch accepted the surrender of the Germans in 1918.
Every surrender ceremony is a kind of theater. By choosing Compiègne, Hitler's purpose was clear. He intended to erase 1918 from the German memory. June 21st, Bill Scheurer drove to Paris, then Compiègne, where he persuaded German officers to let him make a broadcast.
Here, a few feet from where we're standing, in the very same old Wagonly railroad coach where the armistice was signed, on that chilly morning of November 11th, 1918, negotiations for another armistice began at 3:30 p.m. German summer time this afternoon.
As Shira peered through the windows of the car, microphones inside recorded the negotiations. In this rare recording, not heard in 40 years, we can hear the final act played out.
25 Jahre nach dem Ausbruch des Weltkrieges haben England und Frankreich wieder ohne jeden Grund an Deutschland den Krieg erklärt. Nun ist die Entscheidung der Waffen gefallen.
After a brief appearance in the rail car by Hitler himself, General Keitel presided. He said that France and England had declared war on Germany without any reason. He told the French that the humiliation they forced on Germany in 1918 was being reversed. He called it a heavenly justice.
Gerechtigkeit.
Le général pose la question au président de la délégation française de savoir.
The French insisted that they had come only to discuss terms, not to sign anything.
Nun darf ich vielleicht noch ein persönliches Wort an den Herrn General richten. Ich glaube, Herr General, dass wir mit der Erörterung nunmehr hier mehr juristische Dinge.
It was a naive gesture. General Jodl interrupted. The treaty is unchangeable, he said. The French had no choice.
Dieser Vertrag, wie er hier festgelegt worden ist, doch eine unabänderliche Tatsache ist. Und dass es kein Mittel gibt, daran irgendetwas zu ändern.
At one point, the French officer, Charles Hunzinger, asked to telephone his government in Bordeaux for instructions.
Hello? Écoute, une visière ici.
Oh, voilà,
c'est le
général.
Oui, oui. Hello? Oui, j'écoute, mon général.
Talks went on through the evening and broke off at midnight. The next day, there was more talk, but the end was never in doubt. Late in the afternoon, Hunzinger asked whether he could call Bordeaux once again. Keitel said it could be arranged, but he warned that there would be absolutely no negotiations over details.
Die Möglichkeit kann vielleicht herbeigeführt werden, aber Erörterungen über den Inhalt einzelner Bestimmungen dieser Bedingungen
können wir nicht zulassen.
At 6:50 p.m., the armistice was signed. As the cameras clicked, Keitel asked everyone to stand out of respect for the dead of both sides.
Die der deutsche und die der französische tapfere Soldat verdient haben. Alle die, die ihr Blut für ihr Vaterland vergossen haben und die für ihr Vaterland geblutet haben, die ehren wir durch dieses Erheben von unseren Plätzen.
A moment later, the microphones picked up a private conversation. Keitel drew Hunsinker aside and complimented him for his brave and soldierly manner.
Ich bitte den Herrn General einen Augenblick allein. Ihr Vaterland ist verteidigt. Dafür gebührt Ihnen nach Abschluss dieser Besprechungen von Offizier zu Offizier ein aufrichtiges Wort.
There was little he could say. Keitel then clicked his heels in a German salute, and it was over.
Entre soldats a un mot d'appréciation sincère de la part du colonel général.
Hitler returned to Berlin like a Roman conqueror. German radio described a million flowers being flung into the air like a sea of color. The Nazis had won the military equivalent of World War I in 6 weeks. Evil had not only prevailed, it seemed invincible. For the next 12 months, the war would be England's alone. That fall, Winston Churchill spoke directly to the French people. He offered them a eulogy for what had been done and an invocation of redemption.
Good night, then. Sleep, to gather strength for the morning, for the morning will come. Brightly will it shine on the brave and true, kindly on all who suffer for the cause, glorious upon the tombs of heroes. Thus will shine the dawn. Vive la France!
For NPR News, this is Robert Trout in New York.